Hey guys, this is Ryan Groh with Lifeway Films, and recently I had the pleasure of watching Someone Like You, which is a film by Karen Kingsbury, and I was blown away. This film really illustrated some beautiful concepts that are really packaged in a gospel-centric framework. You're going to walk out of the theater feeling good, encouraged in your faith, and really this movie helps provide a framework for forgiveness and walking through tough times. So if you get a chance, I would encourage you, go to someonelikeyou.movie, and while you're there, sign up for Karen's A-List. You can purchase tickets, learn more about the movie, see the trailer. That's someonelikeyou.movie. I think you'll really enjoy this film.
Welcome back to the show. This is Karen Kingsbury. And, you know, I have told so many stories, but I've never told mine. This podcast is giving me a chance to be able to tell the stories that people don't know, the ones that make up my heart and soul, and the laughter, the love, and the losses, too, along the way. And that'll be something we talk about today. Last week, we chatted about adoption and how we adopted our three boys, how we doubled our family overnight. I have my favorite guest back again today, and that's my husband, Donald Russell. Hello, honey.
Hello. I'm so glad to be back.
I know. It's so fun to have
you. It's fun to go over these.
Yeah, to chat, just to look back, right? To remember. So we talked about adoption last week, and that made me think about, obviously, the importance of a father, the importance of a daddy in someone's life. And you are the one who knew my dad best. And you are the best dad that I know. So who better than you to talk about this part of the story where my dad got to the place in his health before he passed where he didn't remember. He did not remember that I was an author.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that today. You know, my dad was my biggest fan. I know you and I both, like right now, we both talk about how important our dads were in our lives. He was the one who cheered me on. I wrote books. I started writing when I was 5 years old. And that was, you know, other kids are outside playing or playing with dolls or whatever. That was fine, but I just, paper, crayons, that was my best gift. Like, give me, and isn't this still the same, right?
Exactly.
My favorite gift is a journal.
Exactly.
Still the same. So I would staple pages together, and my first book was called The Horse, spelled wrong. All the lines slanted down the page, but I could not stop writing. I was like, that just the story poured out of me about this horse and showing up in some family's backyard and eating their leftovers. It's funny, but it was just in, I don't know, I don't really love horses. I love them on the other side of the fence, but it was a story about a horse. And my mom saved that story. She ended up actually giving it to me as a graduation gift. That's how impactful that moment was, and she knew it. So that began this journey of writing, and I wrote short stories when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10, and I would always, always, always take them to my dad. And he would look at them, and he would read them. He would hold them almost like they were just like a gift, no matter how scribbled out the words were or how poorly typed when I was writing stories on a typewriter back in the day. And then he would get tears in his eyes. He would look at me and he would say, Karen, this is beautiful. One day everyone is going to know your writing, honey. One day everyone will know your words. Like I was 8, you know, 9,
yes.
10. By the time I was 12, 13, 14, writing longer stories, like real true short stories with characters and plots and whatnot, my dad would read those stories and he would say, Karen, somebody has to be the next best-selling author. I think it's going to be you. And what's special about that is those words stay with me, and I can hear just the timbre of his voice and the love in his eyes. I can see that. And that's what I say to people when I am at an event and I have a signing line. I'll always tell them, look, my dad would always say, there's no autograph lines in heaven.
That's right.
You're just simply making friends. And so when a mom and daughter come along and the daughter has a shy look and the mom says she wants to be an author, then I remember what my dad said, and I tell that little girl or that teenage girl, you know, someday somebody has to be the next best-selling author. It might as well be you. So my dad believed in my dreams. What did you think of him when you met him?
You know, your dad had such a heart, and he made me feel welcome from the very first second that I met him. Mm-hmm. And I love that he loved lifting people up. our kids, whether it was, you know, a sporting event or a play or anything, and then even just me, you know, talking to me and how are you feeling and what are your hopes. And
you remember you were getting a football tryout when my dad met you, when we, it was like, so in 1986, you were having a football tryout, a pro tryout with what team was it, the Falcons?
Atlanta, free agent thing.
Yeah, a free agent tryout. So my dad and you and me, we would go to Pierce College and you would run the track and my dad would work the stopwatch for you.
And he was, and I was coaching a JV basketball team too.
Right.
And he would show up sometimes to practices.
Yes.
Just to be at practices.
He would bring his big, big, big old video camera.
That's
what it was, the early days
back
of video.
In old days.
And he would prop it up on his shoulder and he would just film you coaching.
He just was, like I said, he cared about people. He had a big heart and he loved people. And
believe.
And I used to always think, I just want to be like, you know, there's people that you just, I hope people see me as that. I know I fall short of that sometimes, but he just loved people.
Yeah. I remember
his smile.
How much he loved watching the kids perform.
Mm-hmm.
Like he would watch Austin play baseball, and Austin, you know, what was that? I don't know, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. He was the home run hitter of the city. And every time he had a home run, my dad was there where he would give him a dollar, do you remember, and say,
yes,
this is for your effort, Austin, and I just got the time of my life watching you play baseball. I remember him going to even the tryouts, you know, the, like you said, you know, like practices, rehearsals. When the kids did a play, he was at their auditions because parents were allowed to go, and he would just sit in the back just nodding and grinning and being so thankful just to have a front row seat, a back row seat, whatever it was, to be able to watch what the kids did. And, you know, I remember when he was so dear. He would look – I talked about this with Tyler the other day. He would look at their eyes, like after they sang a song in the kitchen. You remember how many times we had performances in the kitchen while the kids were growing up?
Concerts in the kitchen.
And Tyler and Kelsey were usually the main singers. And so they would sing a song and do a little routine. And my dad would just, you would think he was at Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And he would look at them just like right into their eyes. And he would say, how good is God to let me live long enough to see that? So precious, just such an incredible, incredible gift of believing in other people's dreams, and especially with my writing. So, you know, went through the journalism track in high school and then in college. And in my senior year at Cal State Northridge, you know, of course, I was a sports writer when you and I met, but that was because my senior year of college, I was offered an internship at the LA Times to write sports. And I'll tell you, it was hilarious when I got the call because I knew nothing about sports. Like, I could not have told you the difference between, you know, an end zone and a touchdown I didn't know what it was. I knew nothing. I liked the atmosphere of sports. You know, I would hung out with the cheerleading crowd. You know, that was my fun crowd in high school, but could not have told you anything about sports. So I get hired as a sports writer, and I went from like the most exhilarating high of like, what? I'm going to be a LA Times, you know, writer. I'm going to have a byline that says LA Times staff writer, to the lowest low, like, oh my goodness, I have no idea what I'm doing. And they hired me obviously because I was a woman, which is not, in my opinion, the reason to be hired. But I took it. Like, what am I going to do? But truly, I took some guy's job, really. But I thought, well, I'm going to have to learn. And so what did I do? I asked my dad. He said, Karen, I've got you. And so I would have a high school football game to cover, and I would have to write like an 8 or 10 inch story. That's how we measured copy back in the day. We didn't do it by word count. And so I knew what that looked like and how to write that kind of a story. But how do I do that when I don't know how to keep track of stats or anything? So my dad would literally go with me to games. He would sit up in the stands and he would take notes. I would be on the sidelines, like trying not to get run over by linemen. And then we would, on the way back, I would say, well, what happened? He would say, well, you know, it was number 20. He's the running back, and he had 140 yards running. So he was the reason they won the game. And he would give me
break it down for me.
And I had like a solid 2 paragraphs of content before I walked in through the double doors of the LA Times to write my story.
And then you used your gift.
Yeah, and then I could just put it together. That part was easy, the writing by then, and that part, thankfully, God's gifted me that part's easy. Sports, not so much. So my dad helped me on every single level mm-hmm. with understanding that. And it was just the most beautiful thing. Now, he knew that I wanted to write books, that I was an avid reader growing up and that I wanted to tell stories. So when I got my first book deal, you know, when Kelsey was born and you prayed for a miracle and we got that miracle, he was like, wow, you know, that's awesome. Like, he was so excited, like, you know, your first book, but it was true crime. And he knew that wasn't my heart. That wasn't what I wanted to write. But he was still, you know, he was right there, front row, first person at my first book signing at the bookstore at the mall that when that book came out. But when I wrote my first novel, do you remember what yes. it was about?
Yes, I do.
It was about my dad. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what I wanted to write about. So he was sick, and he had smoked most of his life. That wasn't good for him, obviously. And he was having a medical issue, and this is where it kind of gets funny with me and you, but he was having that medical issue. He was in the hospital, and we lived in Arizona. And I said, I was so afraid of losing my dad. I was yes. so afraid of losing him because we were so close. And I said, if he dies, I'm going to need you to take time off work so we can go back to L.A. And you said, well, honey, and I know you would have said it differently today.
Well, because I just gotten a new job and I thought, they're not going to give me time off.
I know you, and I love you so much. You're so fun. But you, you gave me the best idea for a book. You said, honey, I mean, if he dies, I mean, he won't even be there. He'll be dead. So I have to do my job. I have to stay and work, which isn't your heart, I know.
No.
But I was so mad, and I thought, okay, fine, then I'm going to write a novel about that. And I wrote a novel about five adult kids who lose their dad, and everyone comes back to their hometown. But the one girl, the main girl, her husband doesn't go with her. So then she goes back, and she, you know, the whole story develops from there. But the truth was, and, you know, I understood your heart, and we talked about it later, obviously, that, you know, you were trying
but
to be
But in your anger at me.
But in my subtle momentary anger, I thought, it spun a story.
Yes.
And the story was called Where Yesterday Lives. That was my very first novel.
Very first one.
Where Yesterday Lives. And I let my dad read it. He was the first person actually to read it. I have a photo. You know that photo that sits on our dresser?
Yes.
And it's just, it looks like anybody else walking by would say that photo doesn't seem like it should be framed. There's my dad sitting on a picnic bench, hunched over, reading a manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
But it was him reading my very first book.
Yes.
And boy, was he proud. He was so excited. But the story was really about him. And he would go around and say, you know, rumors of my demise are greatly exaggerated. Because, you know, but I said, well, Dad, take the hint. Like, stop smoking.
Right.
Live. We want you to live and be with us.
We want you to be here.
And so he got to see that book be published. He got to see the Baxter's books be published. And every time he celebrated, you know, as much as anybody could ever celebrate. And then the day came that I was nominated for Book of the Year. One of my books against all these nonfiction books. They'd never nominated a novel. Do you remember that?
I remember that. I was so proud of you. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it was just – and those things are like – I appreciate them. Mm-hmm. I'm thankful, but that's not why I write. That's not no. the – I
well,
don't
you,
need
you
the
often
awards.
Said that first novel, if nobody else reads it, I just want to write it just to write it. And
exactly.
I said, well, do it then. Write it.
In my conversation with Francine Rivers, you know, a few episodes ago, we talked about that, about mm-hmm. how, you know, I just knew – I didn't even know it was Christian fiction. I didn't know what it was. But I knew it was what I wanted to read.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, Lord, I don't know, but this is what I feel called to write. And then, you know, she helped me so much to be able to even, you know, ramp that up to, wow, you can be deep and real and still include the spiritual aspect
right.
of a story. And my dad loved it. And so when I got nominated for Book of the Year, he was beside himself, so excited. So that was around the 4th of July. It was right around that time. And I remember he had dialysis. So he was sick. His kidneys were failing. And he had dialysis that day. And then your parents were visiting us.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad stopped by. He couldn't get out of the car. He was too weak. My mom was driving. And the word came to me, and I was visiting with your parents, and Kelsey and Tyler, Kelsey and Tyler were singing naturally. And the word came, oh, your dad's out front. You know, he wants to say goodbye to you before you leave tomorrow for the conference to see if you won the award for Book of the Year. And so I said, oh, it's okay. Tell my dad it's, you know, I love him and I'll see him when I get home. And they said, that went out to my dad, and then back came the word, one of the kids conveying these messages that, no, he said he'll wait. It's okay. He doesn't mind at all. Just he'll wait as long as he knew we were entertaining your family. So I thought, wow, he loves me so much. Like, he's going to just wait.
Just sit there and wait.
Yeah, however long. So I went outside, and Kelsey and Tyler were going with me on that conference, to that book conference, ICRS event, the International Christian Retail Show. That's where it was. And so they went outside, too, and we all gathered around the car. And my dad just pouring out love from his eyes and his voice. He just said, I just want you to know, Kelsey and Tyler, I'm so proud of you, and I'm so glad you're going with your mom, because I would have loved to have gone. And, you know, you had coaching. You had to watch the other four kids. And we were always going in two different directions and meeting in the middle. That was always our story. But my dad said, I'm going to be praying for you. I know you're going to win this award, and you should win it. And fiction can tell a good story. It doesn't have to just be nonfiction. So just this beautiful moment. And we said goodbye, told him we loved him, and he and my mom drove off. And so 2 days later at the event.
Well, your dad called me.
Because I win the award.
Yes.
So I win the award. 2 days later, I win the award. That was the most amazing thing, right? That right. I mean, no one knew. No one thought that was going to happen. But my dad, he was the only one, of course, thought that's going to happen. I knew it's going to happen. And so then, now you're home with my dad.
Right. And that's when he called me and he said, hey, Karen won. Yes, we have to have a party. We have to, you know how your dad was just, let's celebrate. We got to, you know, buy streamers and do this, and I'll get this, and you put this up. And I mean, he had it all planned out, what he wanted to do. And I was like, yeah, let's do that.
So
I
precious.
Mean, just his voice. I can hear him right now. He was so happy.
And he sent flowers to my hotel room, telling me congratulations. So I didn't know the surprise party thing was planning of some surprise was going down. I didn't know that. I'm still at the event. I still had a lot of appointments and book signings and things that were part of that event. And then I'm at a dinner, and it's a Tyndale dinner, and there were a lot of major authors in the room. You know, Randy Alcorn and Mandisa was singing. It was just a big event for Tyndale. And my phone keeps ringing. So it just – and I have it on like just on – kind of vibrating, but it wasn't ringing out loud, but it was like just kept going off over and over. And I would look, and it was you, and I thought, what is happening? And those were the flip phones, so I couldn't text you. And I just kept thinking, why does he keep calling? And finally, you know, not wanting, as I was in the middle of the room, you know, at a round table, fancy dinner. And so I answered the phone, but like down low, like I put my head down low by the edge of the table. And you said, Karen, your dad's had a heart attack. And I could just tell by the tone in your voice that it was serious, and it was really serious. back at the house, you know, he had been in his lazy boy chair, and he had been actually answering fan mail. He had been looking at, you know, like looking at what readers were saying. He was so, so proud of me, just so proud. And so he was in the lazy boy chair, and the next thing he was out. And that's a whole story that we'll tell, you know, at a different time. But miracles happened that day. And my dad, you know, everybody in the – I took the phone out into the kitchen where the waiters and servers were working. And I just sat on the floor, and I just cried, and I listened to you tell me how it was and that it didn't look good. But by then, he was taken to the hospital. He was – he had been taken.
Yes.
They had resuscitated him, and he was in the hospital in very, very critical condition. So I went back out, and I was crying, and people realized something was wrong, and they gathered around me, 40, 50 authors and teachers and pastors and singers, artists that gathered around me and prayed that my dad would live long enough for me to see him so that I would have that last moment. And we rushed back as quickly as we could. You know, you just feel like you want to blink yourself back there, but, you know, we had to fly home. And I rushed to the hospital with the book and the trophy that I had won. And so there we are. We go in. We come up to the room, and my dad's on a ventilator, and a trach, I guess, not a ventilator. So he was on a trach because he was very aware when we walked in. His eyes responded that he was so happy to see us both come into the door, and Kelsey and Tyler too. But he couldn't talk, so he was using a chalkboard to talk because he had the trach. And I said, Dad, look, I won. And I held up the trophy. And he looked at it, And he just kind of had a puzzled look, and I thought, my goodness, I don't think he remembers that I was at a, you know, I had an award ceremony and that I won. So I kind of made eye contact with him, and I said, Dad, you remember the book of the year? I won. Here's the trophy. And he kind of shook his head, and I said, you don't remember that? And he said, like, no, he shook his head. He didn't remember. And I said, oh, well, I said it was for this book. And I held up the book. It was Even Now. And Kelsey's actually one of the cover models on the book. I said, remember, it was this book. Do you remember? I held it up to him. And he said, no, I don't. He didn't remember that. And I was like, okay, I don't want to ask the next question. But I had to. I said, Dad, you remember I'm an author, right? And he said, no, I don't remember. He didn't say it. He said it with his eyes. He shook his head. He said, no. And I thought, what?
I remember that.
After all this time, after loving my books from the time I was 5 years old, you don't remember I was an author? But God is so good, because right away he rebounded my heart and he reminded me, but he knows that you're his daughter. You're his. It doesn't matter that you're an author. That wasn't why he loved you. He loved you because you're his.
And that's what I remember is when you came around the corner when we both walked in, he knew you. He lit up and he smiled. But you're right, he didn't remember
the author. I mean, I hope he remembered that I wrote, but it doesn't even matter. It just matters that I was his. And you know, in the Bible, Isaiah 43:1, God reminds us, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have summoned you by name. You are mine. And that's how it is with the Lord, right? God doesn't love me because I write books.
That's right.
He doesn't love me because I have a podcast, because I did a movie called Someone Like You. He loves me because I'm his, and that's how it is with my dad. And so now I believe he's part of that Hebrews 12 great cloud of witnesses that we are surrounded by. And I believe he has a window, and that he knows I write, and that I am an author, and that this book called Someone Like You is about to be a movie, and I know he'll have a front row seat from heaven. I still miss him. You know, it's just one of those things. And I know your story with your dad was different than my story, but it's so beautiful today.
It is.
Tell about that.
I love my dad.
Talk about him.
Well, my mom and dad were, they got ended up getting divorced, but he was a good provider.
Yeah.
He worked hard. He taught me so many things. To be respectful, I love him so much. He's done so much for me. And just looking around, like I said, you look around and you see, well, of course, I didn't want to get divorced. It wasn't fun. You can't say that's fun.
He didn't want to, right?
And, as a kid, you don't
want... You didn't want them to get divorced, right?
Yeah, I didn't want them to get divorced. And like I say, it's not... At that time, it just seemed like everybody was getting divorced, whether it was in my family
or
my kids. Middle school. So I just I wanted to have a different life. I wanted to, and that's where I thought, well, I know, you know, Jesus says he loves us and Jesus wants us to live. In John 10:10, it says that he wants us to have life and have it to the full.
Yes.
And I thought, well, I don't know what I'm doing. As a dad, I don't know what I'm doing. As a husband, I don't know what I'm doing. I like to say I really humble myself, but that sounds, I wanted guidance. And so that's what I thought. Well, I want to be a dad someday.
Yeah.
I want to be a husband someday, but I want to do it. I want Jesus to lead.
Yeah. I remember you telling me about your dad being, you know, he married another woman, obviously, after the divorce, and she had 3 sons. And so he spent a lot of time there. And, you know, you, though, your heart was just so thankful at the time that you could spend with your dad. The time that, you know, even though you didn't get to spend as much time as you wanted. And I know after we got married, I remember just watching that relationship between you and your dad grow and grow and grow. It's so beautiful.
Oh, yes. I love him. Like I said, we talk and I pray for him. He prays for us.
And your dad has a lot to teach people.
Mm-hmm.
He does. He's an incredible man. And our kids love him so much.
Oh, yes.
So, And you still have your dad, and I'm glad that you do. And now I call him dad.
Yes.
That kind of happened after time. You know, it took a while for that because it just seems like a funny thing to call someone else dad, especially when I had the relationship I did with mine. But your dad loves me.
He does.
He defended me from the very beginning when, you know, there were some family issues going on and, you know, just – but he defended me.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved me. And he stood up for me. And I will always love him for that.
Yes.
And I'm so thankful for him and thankful that you have that beautiful relationship with him today. And
yes, I praise the Lord.
And that you learned
that.
So much from him, you mm-hmm. know, along the way. You know, being a dad and having – had a beautiful relationship with your dad, me having a relationship with mine. It just goes back to like what we talked about last episode about adoption and just about how that changes everything for a child who doesn't have a father. And what advice would you give to somebody who didn't have a dad growing up or didn't have a relationship with their dad?
Well, it's hard because, you know, as dads, all of us, myself included, you don't get a manual.
Yeah,
you and you don't know what you're doing. And so you do what you are taught or what you see. And so, I mean, my advice would be if there's, you know, young men up there, they're going to be a father pretty soon. Like, really, it sounds simple, but trust the Lord. Hit your knees. If you don't believe in Jesus, you know, search for him. He said, mm-hmm. Jesus says that you'll find me when you seek me with all your heart.
All your heart.
Because being a dad is hard.
Right.
It's great, but it's hard.
Right.
But I just think, you know, those dreams, like your dad did for you, believe in your kids.
You did that so well for our kids, too.
Breathe life into them.
Mm-hmm.
Realize that your kids aren't perfect. They're going to mess up. And when they mess up, they have to know that they messed up, and you can work things out. You know, there is that fine line between the kids run the whole show, and they're never disciplined. They're never taught anything because I want to be their friend.
Right.
You can't do that.
Right.
And at the same time, you can't be the tyrant that is constantly on them and mm-hmm. badgering them.
Exasperating them. Yeah.
Exactly. So, and that's what I mean, and that comes from the Bible. Some dads only know discipline. Some dads only know, oh, I'll be your friend. You do whatever you want. You know, you can do no wrong. You know, and who's to say I wouldn't have been like that? Or who's to say, you know, so that's why I know I sound like a broken record, but I hearken back to the Word. Just
get
into
the Word.
That's a good
broken record.
Yeah, let the Word lead.
Let's keep it right there. No, that's so true. And you and I remember Kelsey was 2. She was running around church. She was out of control,
mm-hmm.
being a silly little 2-year-old. And a friendly guy, Ralph, I forget, what was Ralph's last name?
Ralph Brune.
Ralph Brune came up to us. Very friendly. He wasn't rude at all. And he looked mostly at you because I think that was wise. You know, moms can get
Mama
there.
Bear?
Mom can be a mama bear if they hear the wrong thing about their precious 2-year-old. And he said, you know, she is old enough to obey.
Yes.
I was like, what? Like, that's so bold of you to say that. But that's what he said. And then you said, this again, see, this is where your humility, you're so strong and you're such an incredible leader, but you have so much humility. Because a lot of people would have been like, well, mind your own business. And you mm-hmm. didn't say that. You very genuinely, not sarcastically, you said, well, we're open to suggestions. Mm-hmm. Like, do you have any ideas? Because, like you said, there's no manual.
Right.
And Ralph invited us to a Bible study called Growing Kids God's Way.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole premise was learn how to really love them, respect them, treat them like they're really in the room, give them a warning. Don't just grab them and say, we're leaving. You know, you have to, I mean, there were a lot of ways of teaching us how to love and respect our kids, but also first-time obedience and respect.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we did that consistently, and if when we felt frustrated, we realized it was our fault because we were loosening up or not staying with our, you know, consistency, then we would pull aside. And I think that was your idea. We'll pull aside and talk about, you know, let's make a new game plan. That's the coach mm-hmm. in you. and it was fun.
It was.
Make a plan, you know, be consistent, put on a united front for the kids, you know, so they would know we were on the same page. And the promise of that program and that Bible study was that when they're older, you'll be friends.
Right. When you're older.
When you're older.
You'll be friends.
You'll be friends. And what do we have?
Right.
We have the most beautiful friendship with our adult kids. It's so one of the biggest blessings that God's given us. And it happens in a blink. And boy, I'm so thankful that we invested the time. Like, you know, when a child's lying to you or when a child's, you know, been disrespectful and not just like rolling your eyes and walking away, but leaning in. And you did that so well. You were, I mean, we had 5 boys and you were literally in the mix, listening all the time. And it was incredible to watch.
Thank you.
Yeah. What, I guess, encouragement would you give to the dads that are great dads out there working hard and they're doing all these things?
I would just keep going, keep at it, because it is worth it. You know, you have a job, you're going somewhere, you feel like you're not getting to all, my kid's not listening to me or whatever. You just encourage you to stay true, stay on that path. You know, we want to raise our kids to love the Lord, obviously, first and foremost, not that they're happy.
Right.
And I think that's a mistake. Well, my kid's not happy. You want them to love the Lord. You want them to be joyful more than happy. Get the joy of the Lord in them. Mm-hmm. And I would just encourage you to, you know, to stay at it. Stay and get help. There's nothing wrong with help. You know, go talk to somebody. Talk to somebody older that has raised kids, somebody that you trust, that you, you know, how are their kids behaving? What are they doing?
That's such a good idea.
That's what I would do. Seek advice. Humble. As men, sometimes it's hard. We have to humble ourselves. We don't know everything as much as I want to think I do.
No, you do. We don't know everything. You were such an athlete in school and college and whatnot, and you know, such an incredible coach through the years. You have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students and players who look back and Coach Russell, Mr. Russell, that's who they look back as their mentor, who the one who taught them more about being a man sometimes than their own parents had, their own dad had taught them. We had hundreds of kids that lived with us over the years. And, you know, that was something that started with my dad, I feel, too, because we had the littlest house with five kids. We had no money. We had a lot of laughter and a lot of love. And other than my you know, times that I felt like, you know, my brother was always a little question mark, but he wasn't even around that much. But my dad would let us have friends live with us. So if a friend was having problems at home, she could live on our couch. We didn't have space, but she could stay. Mm-hmm. And that became our thing as we were, you know, going through life, that we were happy to let – we've had hundreds of people live with us, right? I mean, over the years, I feel like they're between interns, exchange students, players of yours. And always, always those people leave our house and they say, I got to see what it was like to be a man, to be a spiritual leader, to be the leader of a family from watching you.
Well. We're called to plant the seed. That's what we're called to do.
Got to plant the seeds. That's right. It's been fun, the adventure of having so many people that we've opened our doors to, you know, over the years. Was your thought always, you were always in favor of that, or what was your thought on that?
Well, I think people need help. You know, there were times, you can look back, everybody look at your own childhood, when you're a teen, and you get lonely. Mm-hmm. You get lonely at times. So I've always thought, I want to help people. I don't know all the answers, but yes.
So, to whom much has been given, much will be expected.
Right. So that's what my desire is, to always help people.
Well, you've been a dad to a lot more than our kids. That's for sure. And I like to think you learned a little bit of that from my dad.
Oh, yes. Totally. Like I said, if I could be, I mean, he loved people. He loved well.
Mm-hmm. And loved life. You know, just enjoyed being with people and being out and about, going on, taking adventures. When we were little, he would see a storm on the horizon and say, let's go chase it. Let's go see where the lightning is. Just a real zest for life, and hard to say goodbye to him. It was.
Yes.
You know, maybe you had a loving dad and maybe you didn't, but you definitely have a heavenly father who loves you and calls you by name and who says, you are mine. Think about that right now. He is standing there waiting, and whether you love him today or whether you don't even know him, he's calling you to that place. He's the father that all of us long to have, and he'll never leave you. He'll never forsake you, and he will always love you just for being his, the way my dad loved me. So if you would close us in prayer today.
Yes.
Next week, I'm super excited about that, but it's going to be a hard one to talk about. We are going to go back to a crazy time when a paramedic looked me in the eyes and said, ma'am, your husband is having a stroke. That's next week. It's going to be a heavy one, but we'll find what God's got for us in the middle of it. And if you would close us in prayer.
Yeah, I would love to. Jesus, thank you once again for this next breath that we're about to take. We thank you for all our gifts that you have given us. I pray, Father, for those out there who want to be great moms and dads, that they would look to you first. I pray for husbands and wives that they would be a team together.
Jesus.
I often say that they need to hang on to each other while they cling to you. Give them wisdom, Father, Lord. Let them know that you are there for them. We love you. And we thank you for encouraging us and building us up. It's in your powerful name that we pray, Jesus. Amen.
Amen.